Thanks, bye.
Now we have with us the founder of Nimbus Maps. Paul is someone I have interviewed, I have spoken with, and again, he brings lots and lots of development experience, lots and lots of property experience, investment experience. They actually also consult many large companies as well through Nimbus Maps and Paul himself. So please allow me to welcome Paul Davis.
Hi, Jack. Hi, all. Thank you very
Paul,
much.
Paul, how are you?
Yes, I'm very well, thank you. I'm very well indeed.
Good to see you.
Today we have a challenge, don't we? We're looking at how we can scale a sort of a property portfolio. And I suppose as I was kind of preparing for today, and I'm delighted to be here with such great speakers, obviously Simon before me and people like Dan Taylor and people like that in the audience and talking again and people like Ranjan. So fantastic lineup. So I'm delighted to be here. What I wanted to talk about today was this. It's about what's hot in site finding and how technology helps. It's something that I feel like I'm hopefully pretty qualified to talk about. So this is me. This is me looking particularly serious. And that serious face comes out quite regularly at the moment. And the reason for that is that I see there's kind of three key things that are happening in the marketplace at the moment. And those three key things are each big enough as a thing to kind of move a marketplace and to create a disruption in the marketplace. Now, those three key things are indeed these, and apologies for the rather dramatic slide on this Saturday afternoon, but in essence, the three key things that I see happening are, is of course, we have a new use class order. We have this thing called Class E, which is an amalgamation of commercial buildings. Those commercial buildings historically, in my head, have been very different. A shop is very different from a factory. And yet what we now have is that these buildings are now the same thing. And of course they have different values, have different different things that they mean in effect, different specifications of different types of buildings. On top of that, we have a new use class order, sorry, a new set of development rights. So we have different things we can now do to buildings without the need for full-blown planning application, which makes life very easy. So it helps us to take buildings and repurpose them much more simply than we did before. And of course, in case you haven't noticed, we've had this thing called COVID kind of hit us all and turn us all upside down. And that means that what it's done is it's changed investors and owners' mindsets around the assets that they hold and the things they want to do with those particular buildings. But on top of that, it's changed the way that we interact with certain buildings. So it's changed the way that that companies interact with their office space and sort of the way that we're now, often many of us are now kind of working in a hybrid way where we're spending less time in the office and more time at home. And therefore the need we have as a nation for office space has changed quite significantly, right the way through to the retail space that we have on the high street and the way that retailers 2 or 3 years ago, the model would be to fill a shop up with stuff and try and sell it.
Can't get onto this link.
Of course, where we are now is that the retailers themselves have to manage multiple channels. So the retailers that have survived through COVID and are thriving at the moment have this multi-channel approach where they have a website and they're selling things through the website, which means that what the space that they needed back then, 3 years ago, when they were just going to fill a shop full of stuff and try and sell it, is very different from what they need now, because maybe they have a distribution warehouse somewhere, so they need a small amount of space, or indeed maybe they haven't got that and they're now trying to distribute out of the back of a shop and therefore need more space. Which gives us opportunities to reposition assets on the high street, to look at office buildings and reposition of those. And of course, some of those buildings where they were owned by investors that were quite comfortable pre-COVID are now thinking, do you know what? I'd rather be in Spain. I'm fed up. I want to sell my investments and move overseas. So all of these three things kind of collide together in my head in a perfect storm. And when I was putting this slide together, I was looking for a little image of George Clooney, a little boat going up a big wave, but this was the closest that I could find. So I guess the question I probably need to answer before we move on is kind of why is a technology company like Nimbus Maps talking about the marketplace? Well, the reason for that, I want to tell you a very short story. And that story just tries to explain kind of where Nimbus came from. And it really is the story of the journey that I personally have been on with my co-founder and brother, Simon, too. So we started out lives as investors. And in kind of any short story, there's hopefully a little bit of something exciting to start with. And in our case, a little bit of glitz and glamour. And that glitz and glamour for us looked just like this. So in that sort of first part of our journey, we were investor developers, or investors rather, we were buying high yielding assets, things just like this. This was the Warwick Road trading estate in a place called Tisley in Birmingham, not too far away from where Peaky Blinders was set. So not a particularly glorious part of Birmingham, I must confess. My model was to invest in sort of high yielding assets. We got some nice high returns out of our buildings. We could borrow money back in the day at much cheaper levels than we could invest at. And that meant we could make some for every pound we borrowed from the bank, we made a return. So what that meant was that we had some very good income and made some great returns off the back of that. But the challenge with the stock that we bought, this sort of stuff, was that ultimately it reaches the end of its useful life. And the challenge with that is that when it starts to get to that point, if you don't knock these buildings down, they'll fall down, which meant we moved into the second stage of our journey. And this is a world kind of pre-Nimbus Maps. We moved into development. In that world pre-Nimbus Maps, this was the site that we bought. So what you can see here is that we had a 5-acre site in this place called Tisley in Birmingham. And in essence, without a tool like Nimbus, we had no idea that the building was actually sat in flood zones 2 and 3. And even if we had known that, I don't think we'd have known quite what that meant. On top of that, this is our very first development, sort of 5-acre site in Birmingham. We had a river that ran through the middle of it through here, which is where that flood zone problem came from. We had three sewers that ran across the site, and the sort of the big sewer down the side here was actually six feet wide. You actually walked down the middle of this sewer, should you so choose to do so. And indeed, on top of that, we also had an intermediate pressure gas main that ran down the side of the property down here, which served half of Birmingham in effect. So it was a particularly challenging site that we sort of started off with. Fortunately, we managed to move this scheme forward. And this is the scheme coming out the ground. This is the sort of the big building at the front. And there was this building at the front here is actually 40,000 square feet in size. So it's an acre in size, net internal area. And that entire building was raised out the ground by 600 millimeters, so kind of 2 feet out the ground. And of course, the buildings at the back, this building here was 13,000 feet, so about a quarter of an acre. And that was equally raised out the ground by a third of an acre, sorry, by a third of a meter as well. Of course, all of the surrounding areas around the building had the same challenges. So sort of a tricky start to our development journey in many ways. But having kind of embarked on that journey and sort of realizing the way perhaps we shouldn't be doing developments in the way that we did this one, we realized that if we did the opposite of that, actually we probably would be pretty good at developments. And so we sort of carried on with that development journey. And what happened was that we owned a site, which you can just sort of see on the right-hand side of my screen over here. And one day I'll change this slide and make it a better picture of the site that we own. But in essence, we had a little parade of shops on the right-hand side with some flats above them. And we had some interest in the site from Sainsbury's. And we sort of tried to reorientate our site and tried to get them to fit on the site because we thought it's a good covenant, lots of rent they wanted to pay and this sort of thing. And we couldn't make a stack up. So like lots of our customers at Nimbus, we wrote to some neighboring owners to see if anybody might be interested in selling to us or doing some sort of deal with us. And actually, we stumbled across the pub company over the road. So this property was owned by one of the big pub companies. And at the time, it's sort of 2008, if you cast your minds back, we just had the global credit crunch. So people were sort of feeling the pinch financially. And of course, we had this thing called a smoking ban, where before that time, you could go to the pub and you have a cigarette and you have a drink and this sort of thing. And of course, the smoking ban meant that people couldn't do that anymore, which meant that the pub companies were really struggling. Roll the clock forward, what we did was we managed to do a joint venture with them where we repositioned the site into a co-op. Sainsbury's lost the bidding rate and we repositioned it as co-op. Roll the clock forward, then we sort of started doing some more of this stuff. And this was the Mason's Arms up in Nottingham in Hucknall. And in essence, what we did here was this. Did about 100 of these schemes over about a sort of 5-year period, these sort of small supermarket convenience stores. We did this sort of stuff. This is good old school shops with uppers back in the day when sort of before it was kind of cool, I suppose. Sort of seems to be the story of our lives, really, sort of doing stuff before it's cool. And this is what we did here was we converted this into this. And what was kind of particular about it, this was a listed building in Farnham in Surrey. It's had flying freeholds, it was listed. And actually we generated this value by simply using paperwork. We did no actual work to the building ourselves. We had the tenant do a lot of the work themselves through the paperwork that we put in place. And we were able to drive some really good values off the back of those. This was the Silver Jubilee in Canvey Island. And this was back in the days when Morrisons were still acquiring convenience stores before they bought the Blockbuster portfolio and it sort of went a bit wrong for them. Well, you can see at the back here is a couple of little residential units we put on the back at the same time. And then we moved to this sort of stuff. So this, we did about sort of 250 of these schemes. It's about 350 in total, including the convenience store stuff that we did. And this was the Carpenters Arms up in Stroud, where what we did was this is a little private housing scheme, a couple of units on the end of a car park and a reorientation of the car park as part of that. Right the way through to this sort of stuff, this was the Lonsdale up in Firmston in Leicester, where what we did with this was this is kind of the same model in effect, but it was affordable housing rather than private housing. And the challenge that we had through that journey was just quite simply this, it was scale. How do you take the sort of the local knowledge and the understanding that you have of a property that you've, the very first one with the co-op we put on it, how do we apply that on a much wider scale as we go from one site to 100 sites to 1,000 sites to 10,000 sites? How do we do that? And the answer was that we worked it out. And actually what happened as we sort of worked that problem out is that there was some quite interesting things that happened. We ended up acquiring a number of customers. So one of those was Punch Taverns. We acquired Admiral Taverns as a customer. We got retained by Sainsbury's and we got retained by Co-op to go and do some site finding for them too. There was a little bit of impact in terms of the marketplace too. So this was an extract from the Estates Gazette. And what you can see here, this was a sort of typically our main audience or main kind of asset class that we traded with was pubs. And on the right hand side here, we can see this extract that talks in the press about the change of use of pubs into something else. And sort of down here, you can see a little graph that sort of ties in line with the sort of the scale that we were putting into the change of uses that we were doing in effect. And you can sort of see how sort of the approach that we took as we were able to crack that problem of scale, how that impacted the marketplace we were working in. And there were some quite high profile sales as part of that. So Punch Taverns got sold to Patron and Heineken as a sort of pretty high profile sale. And that was largely supported by a comment that you'll see in Punch Taverns' accounts from 2016, which talked about them having found £100 million of the value in the estate, which came off the back of the reviews that we did for them to support that comment in their accounts. So why am I telling you all of this? Well, the reason I'm telling you all of this is that we can now take a step back and we can look back at that sort of rather crazy world that we sort of worked through, sort of looking at large volumes of pubs and look back and say, well, actually, what made those schemes work versus the ones that didn't work? And through that journey that we took multiple, you know, hundreds and hundreds of pubs, some worked, some didn't. And what was the common theme that meant they worked versus not work? And what came down to, sort of what I sweated that down to was kind of four key things that I want to share with you now around what makes a scheme work versus it not work. And those simple principles, as far as I'm concerned, are these. For any scheme to stack up and to work, firstly, there's kind of two ways in which I can drive value into a site. The first is that I can intensify use. So I can take a small bungalow and I can knock it down and I can put a block of flats on it. And often that will intensify the volume of the built space on a property and intensify the number of properties that are on there. And that will often drive the value up in the right areas. The second thing I might do is I might change the use and I might take it from a lower value use and make it a higher value use. So on a rate per square foot basis, for each square feet within each of the property, within each part of the property that I've got, I might switch that use into something that's higher value and therefore drive value into it. And within that, what I would also kind of group into that is the idea of refurbishment, where I take a tired old building somewhere and I improve it. So I give it a good refurbishment and that pushes the value of that property up. So those are the two ways in which I can drive value into a site. And then if I put those applications in places called sustainable locations in effect. And for me, what that means is typically villages and towns where the population is over about 700 people. The reason that that's important is that the people that live in those locations, typically those villages and towns will have a little pub, they'll have a little shop and a bus route into the neighboring sort of bigger towns, which means people can live in those locations and they can support themselves without having to get in the car too much and without having to sort of cause the general economy and sort of the environment problems in effect. And therefore, typically extra development in those locations is typically supported. And then finally, if I submit planning applications that are in line with the character of the area that I'm looking at, then typically I would get consent. So if I can bake those four things, or one of the first two, so the change of use or the intensification of a use, and I can apply that in areas where we have a sustainable location and put applications forward in line with the character of that area, then typically I will get consents. So hopefully that helps. And then what I start to think about is what is the journey that the law people kind of go on? And we've heard from Simon about some of the journeys that others have gone on within his mentorship and his sort of the people he's supporting. And in essence, what I tend to find is that these are typically the routes that people will take. They'll often start buy to lets. They'll often start off and they'll buy a flat and they'll rent it out and they'll make a 3-5% return on investment, obviously way below the kind of investment levels that Simon's talking about. So often then, to improve those yields, people will move from buy to let into things like HMOs. So HMOs typically will kind of get you, in my head, kind of double the return that a buy to let would get you. If we're investing at 5% on a buy to let, I'd expect 10 out of an HMO. Put a bit of debt in place and we suddenly start getting some good returns. Equally, people might start looking at, if we're comfortable with the idea of a buy to let, we're comfortable with the idea of buying a house and renting it out and making a return off the back of that. People often then move into the idea of side gardens, back gardens and corner plots. So in effect, rather than the next house that I buy being a simple house, I might choose the house where the street scene says house, 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 gap, house, 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 where I take that gap and I try and get some planning gain on that to go and put another house into it in its place, in effect. And finally, once we've been through that journey, often people then come down to the idea of commercial conversions, where we take a combination often of that, of the model of changing the use to drive the values up, and also intensification to put more units onto a particular property. So that's all fine. But what we hear here a lot at Nimbus is the following. We hear people saying to us, well, I can't find good opportunities. I can't find opportunities. And the opportunities I do find, they don't stack up. We say everything's overpriced. So if it's on the market, it's just crazy prices. And so the opportunity being baked into that price. I can't make the sites on the market stack up. Anything with any angle goes for way over the asking price. And when I'm bidding, there's multiple other bidders, meaning that the world is very competitive at the moment. And so that got us thinking, and hopefully to try and explain that for you, there are kind of multiple ways we can find opportunities for property opportunities. The first is obviously we can look on market. So we can find opportunities where the property is being marketed for sale or to let by an agent. And in that case, I would think about auctions in the same way, in effect. Well, there could be off-market. Now, for us, what we realize is that off-market can split into two camps. There can be the off-market opportunities where you have a friendly agent that you've looked after that's brought you a deal and brought an opportunity through to you, perhaps a site source or somebody like that. Or indeed, it can be opportunities that you've gone off and found yourself. Now, for us, there's some interesting benefits and challenges across these three different types of opportunity. But I thought what was kind of interesting is that I thought I would run a poll. And what I did is I sort of was interested to find out across my LinkedIn audience, kind of what's working for people, kind of where are they finding things working best. So I set this challenge. I put a poll out on my LinkedIn. I said, what works best for you when buying developments, investments, and land? And is it on market, including through auctions, or are you finding stuff off market through friendly agents, or are you finding stuff off market going direct to owners and working this stuff yourself? So this was the poll that I ran. I ran it here, and you can see I had 3,500 views. I've got about sort of 13 or 14,000 people connected with me on LinkedIn. So of those 3,500 views, I had about just under 60 people vote on this little poll that I put in there. And what we can see is that about 10% of people are finding stuff on market and making that work. The balance of the 90% of people are looking off market. And that's split 50-50 between friendly agents that are looking after them and going direct to owners themselves. Now, we found that quite interesting. And so what I thought I would do is just try to understand sort of why that's the case. Why are people shying away from stuff that's on the market, apart from this sort of anecdotal stuff that I sort of put up on a couple of slides ago? And what I realized was that this was the kind of the way it worked, in effect. If we think about on-market opportunities, there's some benefits to that. So we have, with an on-market opportunity, we have willing sellers with open pricing. So they're there to sell you a property. The challenge with that is, of course, that it's competitive. There's an agent involved whose job is to stick a for sale board on the property, to pump it out as widely as they possibly can, to get as many people interested in that property as possible, which means that the conversion rates, sorry, the profit levels within those are lower. Because if I want to go and win a bid when it's on market, I've typically got a residual value development appraisal sat in the background. And the way that works, there's kind of three component parts to it. There's, what am I going to sell this thing for once it's all converted? What's it going to cost me to convert that? And what profit level do I want out the back of that? So to drive the most amount of money left over for me as well, to pay the most amount of money for the property, in order for me to win a bid that's on market, I either have to have the highest gross development values, the highest sales price of anybody in the marketplace, or have the lowest build cost. And yet we're all going to the same builders merchants to buy our bricks, and we're all tapping into the same set of sparkies and bricklayers and all the rest of it that across that marketplace. Or indeed, I'm prepared to take the lowest profit margin across that on that site, in effect. So in order for me to win that bid, I have to have one of those three things put in place, which makes it very difficult to firstly win that bid, and then to make the return that I want to go and make. On top of that, it can take me time to go and work up schemes and work out what I can do with that particular property. And if I need to bring in some professional advice around that, then of course, I typically don't want to pay for that, which means that I can burn goodwill from my consultants as a result of that. So on market can be quite difficult. And I think that's kind of explains why only really 10% of people are really focusing on that type of opportunity. I mean, you can find them all over the place. You can find them on various websites and things like Rightmove and Zoopro and this sort of stuff. Some of the commercial agents will have their own websites. You can go and look at those as well. If we compare that to the off-market opportunities here, what we have when we have a set of particulars brought through to us from a friendly agent is that we can be passive. We can sit back and we can wait for that agent to bring us through an opportunity. They'll bring us a willing seller, which is kind of what their job is as part of that. The challenge with that is that, of course, those agents only see what they see. And so often the opportunity that they find won't necessarily be in line with exactly what it is you want. So things can be slightly off profile. There are only so many agents out there, and there's only so many of them you can really look after and really get to the top of their list, which means that it can be slightly unscalable. It can be difficult to get the volume of sites through that you want, just relying purely on this approach. Those agents only get paid if you buy this building, which means that first there's an extra cost in your appraisal, but you've got to pay these people. But also what it means is you can get slightly misaligned, because they only get paid if you buy the property. And actually, if you don't want to buy it, then it becomes a bit tense in that environment. And what we tend to find is that the best agents are the ones that get deals done. And those agents typically then, if they find a really good opportunity, they'll spread their risks. They'll have a number of people they work with, and they will send it out to a few people rather than just one. And so whilst you hope it's a one-to-one relationship with that agent, often it's not. Actually, there's sort of two or three others that have had those opportunities too. The way that you find these opportunities is you nurture those relationships. You find as many people as you can, and you look after them the best you can. You pay them well, you give them good fees, and you look after them, play golf with them, and this sort of stuff to make sure that you are top of their list when these opportunities hit their desk, in effect. When we compare that to the off-market letter campaigning, then what we find is that the world changes slightly. So what with this really, sort of the benefits of going truly off-market with a letter campaign is that you hit people before they've decided to instruct someone to go and sell a property. The beauty of that is there's no burning time pressure on them to go and sell this thing. That means you can often negotiate a subject to planning deal or a sort of an option agreement or something clever around the way in which we constructed the deal. That gives you control. The properties that you find are always on profile because you've gone off and found them first, and you've checked they're on profile before you send a letter at the start of it. And of course, the volume of letters that you send is up to you. It's completely scalable. You can send as many letters as you want to. It's just down to the number that you want to send. The challenge with it is it takes some time. It takes some effort. You have to go off and do the job and go and find these opportunities and send some letters out. And of course, when you find the opportunity, there's no clear pricing. The, the owners typically don't necessarily know the value of what they've got. So you need to educate them around that. You need to take them on a journey and explain to them what they've got. And if we do this correctly, and we're going to show you this shortly, you can agree structures whereby everybody wins. So we can show them what the value of the site is as it currently stands. We can show that by working together, we can increase that value. And we can also make sure that we as purchasers are paying less than the value of the site with the planning consent in place. The trick to it is that you settle yourself on a strategy, which is to explain to yourself what that on-profile site looks like. And typically it's 100 letters. If you send 100 letters, typically you'll find a response. The world's getting a little bit more competitive at the moment, so maybe we might sort of tweet a number of 150, something like that. But we've seen sort of conversion rates come down ever so slightly recently because of, I guess, kind of post-COVID and this sort of stuff. So, but typically that sort of number, 150 letters should be plenty to go and get you a site in effect. So let's talk about that solution. So if we just look at how this works, what we find is the process around this. You go off and you find 100 sites, maybe slightly more. We can use something like Nimbus Maps Elite or Elite Plus or Elite Max, and we'll sort of talk about that later. Once you've found 100 sites, you send 100 letters to those owners, and you can do that through some like a mail merge, or you can integrate with, you can load things up into things like Stamp or Doc Mail or UK Mail, these sort of letter engines that you can load these, load a standard template letter into it, and then load a list of addresses and people that you want to go and send these letters to. The back of the 100 letters that go out, we find you'll get about 8 responses, something like that. And typically those 8 responses we split into two. There'll be some people saying, no, I don't want to sell you my property at the moment. And when I hear the word no, I would hear no, not yet. And I would send them another letter in a few months' time and just say, we're still here, still interested. You know, if anything changes, do let us know. Excuse me a moment. And the balance of those 8, the other 4, will say maybe. And they'll say, it's funny that you wrote to me now, actually. I was just considering selling my property, and it'd be very interesting to have a conversation with you and just see what your thoughts are. What's kind of interesting with that is when I hear the word maybe, and when I hear that interest, the natural reaction for most of us is to go, great, I'll make you an offer. And you go off and you go and start working away, and you start working out what's my sales price, what's my build cost, what do I do with this site, designing it all up and working out what that offer level is. What we need to be thinking when we get that response back is not that. We want to start thinking about pre-qualifying. We want to start thinking about asking questions of the person that comes back in. And you'll see on here, actually, there's a question there that I've actually borrowed from Simon. So hopefully Simon's okay with this, because he taught me this on a webinar with me. So the kind of two questions I think are glorious. The first one is, well, you know, when they ring up, it's a case of, well, why did you ring me? What was it about my letter that was so particularly interesting? And they can then explain to you why they're interested, why they're interested in selling their property, because that's going to go at the top of my proposal to them. If I can explain to them in their own words as to why they want to sell their property, then it's going to resonate really well with them. And the second question that I want to know the answer to is Simon's question. And that question is, what's the minimum price you would sell your property for and still be happy? And the magic words are the 4 on the end, and still be happy. It's not an aggressive thing of what's the minimum you want to make out of this. It's and still be happy. So we're not trying to say to you, you know, we're going to kind of take your shirt off your back. We're saying to you, where do you want this to be? Because what that means, if we can understand why they came in at the start, if they come back at the start and they say, I just want the money now because I've got a bill I've got to pay next week, then that's one thing. It's an unconditional sale. I'm going to pay the money straight up front, and we're going to try and close this out quickly. If we're asking the question of what's more important, the price or the time you get, then we can understand then if they come back and say, I'm not so bothered about the time it takes to get the money, I'm more bothered about getting the highest price I can, then let's understand, well, what's the minimum price you'd be prepared to accept and still be happy? Because then we can structure things. We can say, well, if we've got those target numbers, we can explain, well, actually the minimum price you want to still be happy is actually above what the market value of what you've got is. And if that's the case, and I can explain that because here's some comparable buildings that are very similar to the one that you've got, and they sell for a lot less than what you want for this particular property, then the way in which I can bridge that gap is say, well, let's go off and get a planning consent together, and I'll pay for all of that. But what we'll then do is that I will pay you more off the back of the planning consent that's in place. So we'll share the upside in terms of what the value of the property is with the planning consent versus what it's really worth. And guess what? The number that you want is right in the middle of all of that. We share that difference in price, which means that I'm buying a building that's got a planning consent for what I want it to do on it for less than the price, of less than the value that it's worth. And of course, they're getting more than the value of the building that they own. So super, super simple ways to make sure we understand what the owner's doing, so we can then align the approach with and the offer we're going to make to them to make sure they're likely to close. If they say to me, I want the money now, and I say, great, I want to do a subject planning deal with you and going to give you the money in 12 months time, they are never going to accept that. So we need to understand that at the start before we spend time running through and working out all the numbers that sit involved, get involved in the appraisal. So hopefully all of that's clear. So that's all fine, but how do I find 100 sites? Well, with our elite system, there are 8 ways to find opportunities. So there's multiple things we can do. We can go off and some of the key things, we want to find corner plots, back gardens, side gardens. There's tools within the elite platform that will find us those low density properties. If you want to go and change the use, we've got tools in there that will help you manually find sites with PD rights on them. We can target stuff that's got planning consents. We can even go and look in areas where other planning consents have come through. So where are others getting consents, where they're driving values up on sites? We can go and find buildings just like those ones in those areas. So kind of a number of very clever ways of doing that. But of course, the very first slide, or second slide that I put up on the screen was this kind of perfect storm. And of course, about 18 months ago, something very hot happened. And of course, that thing that was very hot was, of course, this. Dear old Boris came out with this build, build, build message. You know, what a hot thing that, so he came out with this build, build, build message, where he then announced all these change of use, these new PD rights that we can apply to buildings. And what that did is it got us thinking here at Nimbus that actually we could create a thing called strategies. And those strategies would allow us to use the data analytics we were using back in the days when we were doing so many pub conversions to find the buildings that he was talking about, and then to work out for those whether they stacked up financially and whether the planning consents and whether the planning constraints around those properties would mean that the PD rights could apply. So what are those strategies that we believe you can apply now? Well, there's 9 of them. And they break up into, this is the 9 that we have here at Nimbus. We have the new Class MA PD rights. We have Class G, shops with uppers. This is where you convert the upper parts of a shop and actually now a Class E building into residential with 2 flats with under PD. We have opportunities where you can find individual bungalows and small houses on big pieces of land where you can knock them down and put more onto them. We have low value commercial properties in residential areas where we can knock them down and rebuild them or convert them to residential. We have the new Class ZA PD rights, which allows you to take the old B1 use class buildings and knock them down. So offices, industrial buildings and R&D buildings, knock them down and rebuild them on the same footprint with 2 stories on top as flats. And we have a wealth of airspace opportunities where you can take ground rent investment blocks of flats, in effect, that's where I think this is most exciting, and put 2 stories in the airspace above them, or indeed do the same on houses. And of course, there's also a number of HMO opportunities where I could either take an existing HMO and put more rooms into it, extend it and put more rooms into it, or indeed take a house in an area where the HMOs work, where it's an HMO sort of area, if you like, and convert those to HMO. Observing things like Article 4 as well as part of that. So let's have a look at this. So commercial conversions package at Nimbus with the Elite Plus system helps you find the Class MA opportunities or Class G opportunities, Class ZA or low value commercial buildings in residential areas. The residential land and airspace package helps you find development plots, low value commercial buildings you can knock down and rebuild for residential. Those Class B1 buildings you can knock down and rebuild as flats with 2 stories on top, or indeed target the airspace above flats or the airspace above houses. And then the HMO opportunities allow you to look at C3 to C4, just the straight change of use of a house into HMO, helps you find HMOs, existing HMOs, where you can put more units onto them. It helps you find low value commercial buildings where you could put a full planning application in to knock it down and rebuild it as an HMO. Or indeed shows you where you can use Class G, which is shops and uppers, to convert two flats above a shop into residential. And the beauty of Class G is that you can back to back it with Class L to take those two flats you've created and move and convert those into HMOs too. So 9 different strategies split across 3 packages with Nimbus here. So let's go have a look at this. Let's go and see some opportunity. Now, what I'd like to do is I'd like to ask somebody within the chat to put a location into the chat for me. Let's go and have a little play around with Nimbus and bring this to life for you. So Dr. Yogesh has said Bromley and Crystal Palace. So let's have a little jump into this. Let's try Bromley for now, shall we? So the way that Nimbus works is that you can type a Google search into the top there. So I can just go off and I can find a particular location. So I've typed in Bromley and Bromley has come back here. This is the sort of center of Bromley just here. It's where Google thinks the center of Bromley is in effect. What we can see on the map is that it's plotting freehold ownership. It's plotting the white lines are showing me the ownership across Bromley in effect. Now that's all fine. Now let's just kind of have a play with some of this. So we sort of started off and we said, well, if we were going to go across Bromley, we were going to go and try and find sort of on my little sort of flow diagram, if you like, I want to go from buy to let, and I want to go and find a side garden, back garden, or a corner plot or something like that. The way that I would do that is I would firstly zoom out. And before we start finding sites, let's just kind of understand Bromley. Let's kind of just get our bearings a little bit. So the first thing I want to do is use this little location analysis tool in the top right hand corner over here. What this allows me to do is to go down to here and plot average residential values across the map. So what it's showing me, sort of it's showing me neighborhood boundaries, and it's showing me where across Bromley the best parts of town are. So I can see that Bromley round here has an average sale price of £490 a foot. As I go sort of into central Bromley, it's sort of 450, so it drops off by 10%. But if I go southwest, I jump up to £520 a foot. Now, the important thing around that is it's showing me where the best parts of Bromley are. So whereabouts am I going to want to build nice, tidy executive homes? And whereabouts in Bromley am I going to be thinking about perhaps an affordable housing use? So that's quite useful. I'm going to sort of perhaps look around here or perhaps look around here to find those sort of back gardens, side gardens, corner plot opportunities. So let's just have a little look over here. I think it's probably where I want to go. And the way I'm going to sort of do this is I'm going to use Elite Plus. I'm going to have a jump into here. So let's have a look at the development plots. So this is showing me, in effect, low density houses where there should be an opportunity to go and infill to the side or to the rear or something like that. And it's done a number of other bits and pieces around looking at the planning constraints that sit alongside that, those opportunities too. So I'm going to zoom in over here and let's go back to the old school way now. So I've used that a little bit of a cheat, to be honest. So what this is going to show me is I'm going to jump across onto this thing called Ordnance Survey Master Map. And what this does is it sort of very quickly identifies sort of areas and buildings where the built space is much smaller relative to the size of the site it sits on compared with its neighbours. So what does that mean, Paul? I mean, who knows? Let's explain that. So as we look along this road here, what we can see is that there's some really quite big houses that sit on these sites here. So you can sort of see this sort of big lump here and these sort of quite big houses here. And yet these two properties here are much, much, much smaller. So what I could do is I could, as I sort of said earlier, if I find sustainable locations like this, and I submit planning applications in line with the character of that area, then typically I'll get support from the council. So if I was to buy this property here, or indeed this one here, I could probably split that into two. And on those two sites, I could probably get two of these on it, which means I could very heavily increase the density of that site. And off the back of that, and perhaps even have a couple of units on there rather than just a single unit, off the back of that, really drive the value of those properties up. So those would be two target sites I would start off with, frankly. And the way I would do that is I'd switch these back on again. There we go. I click on that property there. And what I'll see is an information panel pops out. So it's got half an acre property there. That building footprint is 1,200 square feet. So on half an acre, they've got 1,200 square feet on that property. If I click on this one here, what we'll see is that this one is 0.35. So it's two thirds of the size of it. And yet it's got 50% more space on it. So it's 800 square feet rather than 1200 square feet. So I can probably get two of those onto that site there. And off we go, thanks very much. So 0.6 of an acre, that was 0.35. So just about nearly twice in effect. Hopefully that's kind of clear. And then what I would then do, just quite simply save that to a sort of a Kanban board of opportunities over here. So I click save, it pops that site into a thing called our a workflow in effect. And you can see here, I've got 167 properties saved in that workflow in effect. I can put a load of sites into that workflow and save all the opportunities that I found with this target number, about 100, 150 properties for me to go and send letters to owners in effect. So super simple. That's the first way that I find back gardens, side gardens, corner plots, and really kind of using this little overlay to find these kind of, you know, really quite interesting sites that sort of sit around here. Obviously, you know, we're in London here. We're in Bromley, you know, side garden here. There's clearly something to do on this one up here. So what I'm doing is looking for sort of the street scene and saying, well, where do I see sort of gaps in the street scene? Where do I see scope to perhaps infill opportunities sort of around here or something like that? And then purely sending letters to those owners is kind of all I need to do, frankly, to go and see if anybody is interested. It's kind of a site there that perhaps could do something with. Some of these might even kind of infill in between. Look at the size of that compared to what's over the road. Look at the size of this compared to this one. Sort of lots of opportunities all across these areas. So hopefully all that's clear. Let's sort of move on. So we sort of said, well, we start off and we look at a sort of back garden, side gardens, corner plots. The next thing I want to look at then is things like HMOs. So let's have a jump into HMOs too. So if we get back into the Elite Plus system again, we have these sort of HMO strategies here. So before we start, let's have a look at the marketplace and see where the HMOs are. So we may be in an area where there aren't. And let's have a little look at this for now. So what we can see here is this is showing me where the HMOs are across Bromley. So these sort of red spots, each of these mean there's a licensed HMO in that location. So we've got a bit of an HMO market. It's nothing like as sort of crazy as Croydon. I sort of saw there was a comment in the chat to go and look in Croydon. And HMOs in Croydon is very different from HMOs in Bromley. Sort of when you type Croydon into the map, there's just red spots everywhere in effect. So what does this show me? There are actually some interesting HMOs across Bromley. So there is clearly a marketplace for HMOs in Bromley. And so what I suggest we're probably going to look at is C3 houses converting to HMO. So I can click on one of these. I've chosen the C3 to HMO. We could choose a different one if we wanted to, but let's go for that for now. We'll try and bring some of the other stuff to life in due course. So what it's saying is sort of down here, we've got a number of HMOs. And it's sort of picking out the neighborhoods around these HMOs in effect and saying, well, because there's already HMOs there, the chances are if I put new HMOs in that location, I've probably got a sort of a sensible use there for the property in effect. So if I kind of look up here maybe, then what this is showing me, there's a couple of HMOs here and one over here. And then it's highlighting the map to say, well, actually, how much space is on those sites relative to the size of them? And therefore, could we extend them? So I was going to go and do an HMO opportunity here, an HMO conversion. Then ideally what I want to do is I want to buy a C3 house, change it to HMO to drive the value up, and then perhaps extend it as well to drive additional value into it in effect. And what it's saying basically is that, for example, a little, very small little unit here, very small little house, and another one here, sort of tiny little houses like this. And yet an HMO can look like that. So I could go and acquire one of these, probably double the size, make it two or three times the size and extend that out, and then put change the use, drive the value up to the change of use, but also then put more space onto the property too. Again, same trick, save it, put it into my workflow and send the owner a letter. So very, very simple. You can sort of see the size of buildings that can go onto these sites relative to the ones that are shown in the warmer colors where they've got a lot less built space on the property itself. This one here, you may even just put another unit on the back as well as part of that. So there's sort of a number of things you could kind of blend some of these strategies at the same time for the, depending on the actual property itself. So hopefully that's clear. Are we able to serve as an Article 4 area? Yes, we are. So if I click on one of these, what you'll see is that there's actually no Article 4 area. So when we click on the site, it will show us that there's no Article 4 in Bromley, which is quite useful. It's saying that the site density is 14%, but if I was to click on, say, that one, that's 23%. So what it's saying is that I could kind of put 50% on the built space on that property to sort of add a lot more built volume on the site versus the properties elsewhere on the street, in effect. So hopefully that's useful. Let's kill that now and let's sort of move on. So I sort of said we'd look at side gardens, back gardens, corner plots. We've done that. We've looked at some HMO opportunities at the same time. And now let's have a little look at some commercial conversions too. So that's the kind of bit we sort of talked about at the end. And that sort of gives us an opportunity to look at where we can change the use and also intensify it. And I suspect if Dan Taylor's on later, what he's very keen on is using things like Class MA as a base case where I know I can get a planning consent through PD and then go back in with a much more kind of aggressive planning application, knowing that I've proved the change of use. And so let's just see how we might have to find some stuff for Dan. So if we click on the Class MA overlay, which is part of our commercial conversions bundle, this goes off and it says, where do I see a Class E building? So all this kind of new jumble of new use classes all put into Class E. Where do we see those opportunities? And what's then interesting is you can't apply Class MA to every single Class E building. It's only certain ones. There must be smaller than 15,000 square feet, just over 1,500 square meters, which is about 16,000 square feet, actually. Quite a big building now. It's kind of best part of 30 units, I think. Best part of 30 flats you can get into something like that. So quite a big old lump of a building. It mustn't be an Article 2.3 land. And so Nimbus has gone off and found those buildings. It's removed the stuff that's in Article 2.3. And it's then also looked at the financial viability of those properties too. So if we kind of will zoom in, we'll just see what it's highlighted as a building here. Let's have a little look and see what it is. So Class E shop, not sure I'm that bothered about a Class E shop. Might be okay, but I'm sure we can do better than that. Let's see if we can find something better than that for now while we're here. Guessing these are probably shops as well, but let's have a little look. There's a shop, 5,000 square foot shop. That perhaps is a bit more interesting maybe. Let's have a little look to see what this looks like. Let's just see what we've got. Yeah, I'm not sure I'm that bothered about that one actually. That might be upstairs as well. In fact, let's do some shop stuffers. Let's just do these shop stuffers because that may be what that's showing me. Let's have a little look and see what we can find. So this is looking for, in fact, let's not jump around, Paul. Let's be focused. Apologies. Let me get rid of that. Let's go back to Class MA and find you a decent Class MA opportunity. So let's have a little look. Let's see what this is down here. There you go. So a little 1,500 square foot office building just there. So what that's going to show me then, hopefully. So the pop-up on the right is saying this little office building that it's found, which is just on the end there in effect, is 1,500 square feet. We can see that it's got this kind of residential feel to it. So we're sort of looking for this sort of street scene where you've got house, office, house in effect. And that's exactly what we found here. It's saying sales values are about 580 in this particular location, this particular part of Bromley. It's saying conversion costs about £115 a foot, about two-thirds in new build. That might be a little bit light at the moment. So the build costs have gone up quite quickly recently. But it's saying the rental value of that building is about £18.50 a foot. So we've got sort of a sensible rental level, 6% net initial yield means it's worth about £300 a foot. That means the value of that site is sort of 450, convert it to say 200, and it's worth 875 when it's done. That gives you about a 40% return on cost. Now, most developers want 25% return on cost, which means there's 15% return on cost left over. And that's where the magic sits. So the magic sits with approaching these people to say, would you like to sell your office building? And then being able to prove to them it's worth about 450. But saying to them, actually, there's another 100 grand worth of profit in this once we get a planning consent on it. So how about I pay you 500 for this property rather than 450? And we do that on a subject to planning basis. I'll go and get the planning consent. I'll pay for the planning consent. I'll have my money back first, and we'll split the upside on top of that. So where this building really is worth 550 with a planning consent, we pay 500 for it and we share that 100 grand extra with the owner, which means that they've got a £400,000 building they're selling for 500, and I'm buying a £500,000 building for 500, which means I'm happy, they're happy. What's stopping us? Super, super simple. Save it to workflow, send a letter, off we go. Thanks very much. There are some very helpful and super quick tools I just want to quickly show you just to help with that negotiation along that journey too. So in the location tool up here, like in the location analysis tool here, what we have are commercial comparables. So if I'm looking for office buildings that have sold nearby, then I can plot all these on the map in here, and I can go off and have a look at each of these that have sold. You can see price they sold for and rates per square foot. So super quickly, I can prove to the owner that the value of that building is, of course, the 450 that I'm talking about, and that's why my £500 a foot is my £500,000 offer is so good. And on top of that, what I can also do is get really comfortable with the sales values across the area for residential. So let's go and see what the index sales price of residential properties are across across Bromley. I'm going to convert it into flats. Those flats are going to be, let's say, somewhere between 500 square feet and maybe 800 square feet or something like that. So very quickly, I can see what are all the sales prices across Bromley for those types of opportunities. I can put those into Excel, see a list of all of that, and say exactly what these buildings are worth. On top of all of that, we want to go and also just be super clear that the sales prices for the office buildings we've been looking at, we want to make sure there's nothing on the market that might kind of trip us up, and the owner might say to us, well, yes, some of this stuff did sell, but COVID's pushed these prices of office buildings up. It's kind of hard to believe, I think, that office building prices shot through the roof through COVID, but we can go and check that too. So we can go and see down here, there's an office building on the market to let on with Michael Rogers LLP. This checks the top 400 surveying firms' websites every night and just keeps you up to date, so you know exactly what stuff's on the market, exactly what's sold, so you can educate that owner exactly around what their buildings are actually worth. So hopefully I've taken you on a journey where we've seen the route we might take for on our journey in property. We've looked at how we can find opportunities when we're looking for back gardens, side gardens, corner plots, HMOs, or indeed commercial conversions. We focused on Class MA because it's kind of the hottest thing right now. It's the thing that came out so recently. If you'd like to try and access some of this, then the Elite Plus package is very useful for this. It gives you access to commercial conversions or residential land and airspace, or indeed HMOs, HMO opportunities. Now, if you want to understand the difference between the packages, we have Elite Plus, Elite Max, Elite Plus and Elite Max. Then with our Elite system, which is kind of our flagship tool, if you like, you can find sites with planning, whether that's approved or refused. You can find underdeveloped sites, these are your back gardens, side gardens, corner plots. You can find change of use opportunities, but that's a manual process with Elite. You can target property portfolios, you can check values, you can assess planning viability, you can see if things are listed or if they flood or any of those kind of things that might kind of cause problems. And of course, you can connect with owners. You get access to our training, you get unlimited support, and you get access to our weekly webinars. But finding the commercial conversions, the HMO opportunities, and the residential land and airspace opportunities is a manual process with the Elite system. Elite Plus gives you everything in Elite, but it gives you automated packages for one of those three different types of opportunities, whether you're looking for commercial conversions, HMO opportunities, or indeed residential land and airspace. Elite Max gives you all of that, and it gives you all of those different types of opportunities, the commercial conversions, HMO opportunities, or indeed residential land and airspace. If you'd like to make the most of that, then what we recommend is that you have a one-to-one demonstration with our team here at Nimbus. They can take those locations. I'm very sorry that I couldn't, but I focused on Bromley. There's a whole wealth of other locations that people wanted me to go to. So apologies, I couldn't do every single one of those, but I'd be clicking around for most of the day for you. If you'd like to take the benefit of one of those packages, then make sure you quote pen offer to our team. That will save you £30 a month on your subscription with us through your through today's session with Jack and the team at Penn. So for me, last question is, are there any questions for me?
Thank you very much, Paul, for that amazing presentation. Really great listening to you. Nimbus Maps is great. And you do have regular webinars as well if you're signed up to Nimbus Maps. So you get a lot of value from there. So do consider that. We have a few questions in the chat box, which I'm going to read to you first. Sure. I think you have addressed some of this actually, but I'll just read it again. So Alan says, how is Nimbus Map dealing with rapidly rising construction costs vis the viability of the sites? I think he's talking about development sites and commercial conversions.
Totally. So the Elite Plus system uses that calculation to say, where do we realistically think that the profit on cost is going to be over 25%? And it doesn't mean to say that, so often those values of those percentages are much higher. So it's purely a hurdle rate. And so what we're aiming at is saying, where is it likely that financial viability is going to stack up? As the build costs are going up, actually the top line and the sales values are going up as quickly, actually. And so, you know, probably slightly quicker, actually. And so those build costs are actually being updated. We're tweaking the system to make them much more live, actually. I suppose the key thing is it's a hurdle rate they've got to get over at the moment. So as those build costs go up, the sales price are actually going up as quickly. So we're pretty comfortable that the buildings we're putting in there do stack up. It's a focusing of your sites that we're using this for. It's not a full red book valuation that we're putting in place. It's sort of a simple, do we think this should stack up? Do we think this stacks up to a point where it's more viable than it would need to be? And therefore we've got planning gain on that site. And if we've got planning gain, we can share the planning gain with the owner, which means we can then get a subject planning deal out the back of it. That then brings in a whole lot of other kind of interesting stuff that I suspect Ranjan will talk about later, where we can have delayed completions and we can do some clever stuff with all of that and sort of minimize the deposit we're putting down and recycle our cash and all that kind of good stuff that I'm sure he'll talk about later.
Absolutely. And just on the back of that, Paul, is the build cost, is that also taking into account the difference between the cost per region? So obviously things are more expensive down south compared to the north. So does the Nimbus map take that into account as well, or is it just a blanket calculation?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. We're fully aware that build costs in the southeast are rather higher than others. So the team is actually sort of rebuilding those financial viability calculations to make them much liver, much more live, if that's made that word up. In essence, what that will then give us is even more of that, where we're really trying to predict what those true conversion costs are. I suppose the sort of, when Dan speaks, there'll be sort of kind of bear that in mind, because what this is aiming at is saying, well, if we do a very simple vanilla conversion of that building from office to residential, we'll get this sort of profit level out the back of it. That wants to stack up. So that's your base model. But what you'll probably hear from Dan later on is then looking at, well, take that base model and then build on top of that. So take that conversion of the office into six flats or something like that, and then say, well, with that planning consent now being a thing, because I've done that under Class MA, what about if I go back in for an application with a floor or two on top, and see if I can get that consent, because the change of use has now been dealt with through the PD rights. Now let's talk about a comprehensive scheme with that consent bagged. So we're not talking about change of use, we're just talking about, well, can I have two more floors on this building? We're in Bromley, where it's built up area, and, you know, and those sorts of things. So it's kind of, it's trying to get a very simple base model that we know works, and where that appraisal is conservative, so we know we can get it to stack, where we can then go back in and we might sweat it harder and do more on the site. But it's getting that, does it work in planning terms? Does it work in financial viability terms? If all of that works, let's spend some more time on it.
Absolutely. Brilliant. Thank you. The next question was, does Nimbus Map search the properties by number of rooms? So I'm wondering if that's the HMO package, maybe.
Yeah, so on the HMO overlay, you click on a property and see the number of rooms that are on there. It also, one of the useful things about it is that you can use the residential sales comparable. So I used it for finding flats. You can do the same for HMOs. One of the problems we always found with HMOs is kind of what's it worth, and that always relies on getting some decent HMO comps. And it's beautiful, but it's absolutely magnificent. You can download it. It shows you the number of rooms on it. Shows you how those how that kind of stacks up, and kind of what the number were and when it was sold as an HMO or not. But on the overlay, you can go and see what the number of rooms are. So yes, absolutely.
Okay, does that happen for the residential as well, or is that a bit too much to look for?
So we don't do searching for number of bedrooms on a residential property. What we're really bothered about is where are the residential properties, kind of regardless of how many rooms are in them, where we can build more, where we can convert and drive the values up. So we're sort of less bothered about, can I find a three-bed house? probably just nip onto Right and find a three bed house on there instead. What we're bothered about is where do I find that three bed house that's got a very big side garden or a big back garden that we can do a lot more, or where the houses on the street are all five beds and it's a three bed, and so can we go and add a much bigger extension on it.
Brilliant. Quite a lot of people are asking for the slide with the packages, for the elite packages back on. Thank you. Great discount with the £30 off as well. So
yeah, sure. So you'll see the some discounts from the various prices here. So make sure you quote Penn as part of that. And that's the QR code. In fact, if you're okay, I've probably got a link I can pop in the chat if that would be helpful for people.
That'll be helpful, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
Fabulous. Thank you all.
I think we've just got one last question, Jack, just before we go. And there's one question about if you could tell if it's an Article 4 area.
Yeah, sure. So on the HMO package, the Elite Plus HMO package that brings in, when you click on one of the opportunities, it'll tell you if it's HMO Article 4 or not.
Yeah.
The calculations on the Elite Plus system, what it does is it looks at the density of HMOs around the property as well. Mm-hmm. So even when it's in an Article 4 area, the properties that we're showing is run a calculation. So what's the density of HMOs relative to residential properties within a 50 meter radius of that property? Because even if it's Article 4, I can still get a consent for that. And Article 4 is actually very interesting because many people think Article 4 is a problem. Article 4 is magnificent. If you can find opportunity, you can get a consent in an Article 4 area. And the reason for that is that you have higher values in an Article 4 area because there's a limited supply of HMOs that are there. You've got a marketplace where there are lots of HMOs there as well, which means there's a marketplace to go and take the rooms that are in the HMOs. So you've got a really strong marketplace. And of course, if you can then take take a C3 house, convert it to HMO in that Article 4 area, because you've done the calculation through Elite Plus first, then you can get some really great returns off the back of that. Sales values are higher, you've got a great marketplace to let these buildings. It's happy days.
Yep.
And you actually find that developers get scared of it. So you find many developers that look at do HMOs, look at Article 4 and go, it's too hard to find, I'm going to waste so much time, I'm going to look elsewhere. So they're actually less competitive for this sort of stuff than elsewhere. So Article 4 for me is a great opportunity if you've got some like Elite Plus to help you with them.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Jack, over to you.
Thank you, Paul, once again. Always a pleasure to have you here. The kind of knowledge that you share, for those who can actually see through, there is so much money to be made, as well as there's so much more out there that they can do with this clarity of how to find these deals. So thank you once again, Paul, for being with us. Pleasure to have you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.